This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world.
Today on Dreamland, we are going into the past in a very unique way. One of the largest issues in the whole Close Encounter UAP experience, as our visitors come closer and closer to us. People are now talking about disclosure sort of on and off in the government. And not that that matters very much, because obviously our visitors are the ones we're going to be doing the disclosing. But what about the issue of shock? It's called ontological shock. That means basically the shock of the new. Today we have a guest with us who has delved very deeply into this entire issue. Reverend Michael Carter is, well, we'll let him tell us a little bit about himself and his life. He is the author of Alien Scriptures, Extraterrestrials in the Holy Bible. He has been in New York for 27 years, and, well, I don't think he's in New York now, but in any case, we'll catch up with him. He has a deep interest in the whole issue of what happens to religion. What happens to religion when this emerges? He's a longtime contactee. We'll talk about this as well. And I would like to welcome Reverend Carter, Michael, to Dreamland.
Whitley. It's good to see you, my friend, and it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me on. We haven't seen each other in, oh, Lord, but it's good to see you now.
Oh, Lord is the correct amount of time. We haven't. All right. This is an extremely serious topic, and it's a serious topic because people two things are going to happen as this emerges. Right now, the religious experience in the world is sort of in flux. In Europe and in England, and even in most of Ireland, you don't find anything like the religiosity that used to be present there even a few years ago. India is becoming similar. India is becoming much less devoted to Hinduism, especially in the upper levels of the society. Mm-hmm. And of course, in Japan and China, religion is really just a cultural afterthought. Now, however, if someone comes in here from the outside and they're fierce and they're powerful, those temples and churches are going to immediately be repacked. We have a mutual friend, at least I hope you're still friends in Dan.
Oh, with Dan, yes, we're still friends. We're good friends now, as a matter of fact, yeah.
Oh, well, good, yeah. Dan, and we'll talk a little bit about the more traditional approach to this, which is Dan's approach. Dan is a wonderful guy. He's an Anglican minister an Anglican priest in England, who his church happens to be the church that was used in War of the Worlds, in the original War of the Worlds, when the military go up into the steeple of a church and they look out to see where the Martians are. That's his church. That's Dan's church. Wow. And Dan is also fascinated with UFOs, and it's an apparent complete coincidence that that's his church. But anyway, I love Dan, and I'm very happy to mention him and his wonderful parish on this show. If you're in England and you want to have a beautiful service, go to Dan's church. Don't miss it. Dan Stuart Banks. Okay. I believe it's St. Thomas's. St. Thomas's in Cobham, Chobham. And all right, now let's start with how in the world you got into this, because it came after you. It came after you like it did me. And it did a friend of mine who's working on a very relevant project 2 nights ago.
Oh my God.
It came after this individual as well. And basically initiated them into this journey. Let's talk about your initiation.
Okay. I came up in the Baptist tradition, and, you know, I loved it. I remember someone asking me when I was a youth growing up in Baltimore. I don't know how we got into it, but they said to me, "You don't believe in UFOs?" And they said, I said, "No." And they looked shocked. I remember the look on their face. We were downtown walking around, and he said, "Why?" And I said, "Don't laugh, because it's not in the Bible." So there you have it. That's it. I was in the dark. But I was already getting out of the tradition, Whitley. I was starting to read existentialist philosophers and you know, just delve into, you know, metaphysics, the occult. And so I was moving away from that Baptist tradition of us versus them. And so my girlfriend at the time, we took a trip. She and I took a trip to Mexico and to Cancun. And we decided one day to go to see the pyramids at Chichen Itza and Tulum. And if you haven't been there, which I think you have, but just wonderful. And, you know, seeing these pyramids and how accurate they used the technology about the solstices. It was just, well, wait, how is this happening? Where are they getting this information? But still, I wasn't ready to go there. December 28th, 1989, came back to New York City, got off at JFK. She wanted to go straight home, which she did. I have been invited to a get-together down in Hell's Kitchen. And I wanted to go. I wanted to gloat. My friends were, you know, it was freezing in New York, you know, December 28th. It gets cold. And I had just come back from 85 degrees, kind of bronzed. And I wanted to gloat, which I did. And I went to a friend's home. And I went to a friend's home. And no adult beverages. Lots of deviled eggs, which I love very, very much. And we chatted and talked and oohed and aahed. And I went back home, you know, kissed a goodnight. I'm getting into bed. I don't know whether I sensed something or someone in the room. I just know I got up in the middle of the night. I sleep on my stomach. And when I turned over, I wish I had brought, I have a statue of him. Anyway, I saw Gray. But with a really enlarged head, kind of chalk colored, the stereotypical one, except the back of the head protruded. Mm-hmm. And so it stared at me, he, she, it, and it was no more, it couldn't have been any more than 4 feet tall. It was at the foot of my bed. Around, I'll say him, was a blue light, and around that was this bright white light, and he had a jumpsuit, like a NASCAR suit, that looked like that. Okay? Uh-huh. It looked like Reynolds wrap. And yeah. I thought I was going to have a heart attack. My girlfriend at the time, I've never, ever been that afraid. And she wouldn't wake up, Sandy. And we're still very good friends. She was my first wife. We were married. And she wouldn't get up. And this being was there, I got in a fetal position, Whitley. I'm not a macho guy. I don't even pretend to be. And I pulled the covers up over my head. Now, this was at the Excelsior Hotel, residential hotel, still there, 45 West 81st between Columbus and Central Park West, Upper West Side, right across from the planetarium. It wasn't like Betty and Barney Hill. I was out on some rural road. And I pulled the covers up over my head, and the temperature changed in the room. I felt like I was outside. And I heard this whoosh, whoosh, and like wind. And I finally grew a pair, and I pulled the covers down. No one was there. Sandy woke up. I described to her what happened. And she's a very deeply understanding and spiritual. She didn't say, what are you, some kind of nut? And then, you know, we talked about it. And this happened. This is the truncated version because I've seen different beings. But every full and new moon, they would show up, paralyze me, never really talking, but showing me pictures in my head, showed me an event that had happened, a future event, a speech I gave, two events, and showed me what I thought was a past life as a clergy person. So that's how I got, and after that, I could not, I just, you know, I love to read anyway. I just read everything I could up on this. But I'm not wired about for the propulsion systems and back engineering. I'm wired for what spiritually, what does this do, what will this do to our spiritual beliefs, to religion? And so that's the path that I was on. I later wound up getting in a support group that you know about, Harold Englin, his group Space. That's how we met. And I got the late Dr. Gene Mundy regressed me, and then later our friend Bud did. And uh-huh. I was leading a double life, obviously. I mentioned it once to a minister friend, and they said, Michael, I believe you believe what you said is real, but if you want to have a career in this denomination, you must never, ever tell anybody that story again. And
what denomination? That was still the Baptist?
No, this was my denomination now, Unitarian Universalism. Yeah. Right. Yeah, and then at, a few years ago, one of our bigger donors tried to get me fired. She said she woke up in the middle of the night. She was watching TV late. She probably saw Ancient Aliens. She said, I saw my minister on a show talking about little green men. And she brought this to the board. And I thought I was gone because she was a big donor. And, you know, money does play a role, doesn't it? And they stood up. They stood up for me. They said, A, he's not preaching it from the pulpit. B, he may be right, but he's done nothing as egregious as what you're suggesting, that we should let him go.
Let's talk about your first Alien Scriptures is his book, Express Your Holy Bible. And we're going to take a little break before we get into the whole question of what is the religious response? What is going to keep people like the lady you just talked about from basically completely losing it when and if this emerges? I mean, what if a gray showed up at the foot of her bed? What would happen to her? This is what we need to think about. And
yes,
it's very, very important, because I will tell you, I know them well. They are not showing up at the foot of her bed until they are sure that will work.
Yes, I agree.
Okay, that's the bottom line. So disclosure aside, the key thing here is how can we, those of us in the close encounter experience, help the others survive the shock of this reality? We'll be right back. We're talking to Michael Carter, Reverend Carter. His website is michaeljscarter.com. And you can follow him on a lot of places, Facebook, Twitter, or X, I guess it's called now, IMDb. And we're going to talk about his acting career as well. And he teaches Reiki, levels 1 and 2, and master levels. So he's in this world. He has been initiated. That first visit to you was an initiatory experience of the first order.
Yes.
Okay. So let's go on now. You, in your book, in Alien Scriptures, you talk about the thesis on UFOs and religion that you presented to Union Theological Seminary. Mm-hmm. Now, one would think that would not go over very well, especially in view of what you've said so far. What happened?
Well, I don't know. I was very fortunate. I thought they were going to say, young man, you cannot graduate from this school, from this seminary with this kind of tripe. But I was astounded. First of all, they said, if you can prove the case, write it. That's what my counselor had said. And I feel this, Whitley. These people are academics. They know the biblical languages. They know Hebrew. They know the Greek. Some of them know the Aramaic. And so they have to know that the various translations of these scriptures, especially the First Testament, the Old Testament, they're talking about flying machines. They have to know that. But I must tell you, I was elated. I was relieved. And two professors, both in systematic theology, asked me to stay on for a PhD. That's how impressed they were. And I always thought, I'm always grateful to Union Theological Seminary for allowing it to happen. And that's what Alien Scriptures was based on. That was my master's thesis. I threw in my first encounter with the gray, you know, but that was my master's thesis. And so I just figured that if this person visited me in 1989 AD, then he was probably here in 1989 BC and probably beyond. And so that's how I got into this. But remember now, I'm not telling anybody that I'm seeing these beings. I'm not doing that. And so I ran across, and you know, Barry, the Reverend Dr. Barry Downing. I ran across his book, The Bible and Flying Saucers, which he had written in 1968. It was like water to someone who was stranded in the desert. Another clergy person, not an experiencer, but I didn't care about that. I was still kind of fighting for my sanity. And so when I read that book, that really kind of greased the wheels, as they say. And so our theology is different. He accuses me, and he's my good friend, he accuses me of wanting my God to be warm and fuzzy, because my thesis is that Yahweh is not warm and fuzzy, and is probably not this omnipresent, omniscient, omnipotent energy of the universe. But that's how I got started. And you know, I'm reading, I'm studying. Morris K. Jessup wrote a book on UFOs in the Bible, died under mysterious circumstances back in the 50s. R.L. Dionne, Does God Drive a Flying Saucer? So I was getting the religious aspect. And then I started reading comparative religion, you know, the Vimanas and the Hindu tradition and the Upanishads and the Vedas. And, you know, the Babylonian text, the Enuma Elish, the Mesopotamian text, and the difference, I'm starting to see the differences. They are unabashedly, they're not ashamed. They're not talking about a monotheistic God. They're not talking about any of that. They're saying we were visited by these beings, the Anunnaki, in Hebrew, the Elohim. And I was trying to compare the dots. And I'm saying, why would our ancestors lie about all of this stuff? They're trying to tell us. And of course, the indigenous folk, the Aboriginal folk, talking about the star people, you know, Cherokee, Hopi, Australian Aboriginal. So I'm seeing all these stories about floods and all these stories about beings coming from the sky and almost giving us a reboot. So I'm looking at the Bible very differently now. And so, and I'm one of very few ministers that are talking about this. And I get why But it is the ontological shock, as you mentioned at the top of the hour. People are, you know, they've been programmed one way, and people take the religion very seriously. Because I moved from New York. I'm in the South now, in the Bible Belt. And this is not welcome news. And it is resisted. Not at all. I will say this.
You went from the frying pan into the fire. Why did you make that move?
New York was getting so expensive. And I was working out in Queens, even though I was living in Manhattan. And I was going out to, you know, I had to catch the bus, I had to catch the subway, transfer time, you know, and go out to Queens. Then I had to catch a bus. It was 2 hours commute up and back each day. I was a chaplain, which I loved, but I was working for a supervisor who didn't believe in the interfaith model, even though we were both trained that way. And I said, where's this going? And my wife at the time, we wanted to start a family. And so we just decided it was time to move.
Okay, let's go back to the Bible and to something that you said just a moment ago. I think the question I'm trying to get to is the reinterpretation, or I guess not even a reinterpretation on your part, but your reconnection with the idea of angels in a new way after you had that initiatory experience.
Well, what had happened was I happened to live on the Upper West Side, and I found out that Zachariah Sitchin lived near me. And I remember meeting him. I was reading his books, and that was all the talk in our support group and Harold's thing and Bud's group. And we used to get together. Both our groups would get together. Our group was more people who thought they had positive, that they were relatively positive. And Bud's group was people who were saying, no, no, this is not, you guys are nuts. So we would get together every so often, both nuts together. And so, but one day he met me in Zachariah met me in a Burger King on 83rd and Broadway. And he was writing his book, Divine Encounters, then. And we talked. And he got me, and Barry too, Barry Downing, his writings. And I started to see that these angels, it's an interesting word, right? Malak in Hebrew, angelos in Greek. Angel, it tells you what these beings do. It tells you that they are, you know, they're envoys, they're messengers, but it doesn't tell you anything about where they're from. And I noticed in the Bible, they would eat. They would wind up getting women pregnant. Not a bad job, I guess. Every woman they meet is pregnant. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. But nowhere in the Bible does it say they have wings. Now, for those listeners out there, I don't want to upset you. I'm not saying angels don't have wings. What I am saying is that nowhere in the Bible does it mention wings. And so I started saying, well, maybe that's the way our ancestors are telling us that these beings flew. And then I just watched how they started behaving. You know, some of them, well, all of them were kind of pro-human beings. You know, they would come to Jesus in the New Testament. They came to the prophets in the Old Testament. They helped Peter get out of prison in the book of Acts. They helped Paul when he was on his way to Rome. And so I was like, well, these beings, they are, and they're coming from the sky. Maybe they're extraterrestrial. And I said, if I replace extraterrestrial everywhere in the Bible where I see the word angel, the Bible makes more sense. And that was the clue for me. The other clue, which was probably most important, was Zachariah Sitchin saying that Elohim is a masculine plural form of the gods. And so, and that was the original translation, if you will, in Genesis 6, where it says, let us make man in our image, us. It's plural.
Yes.
And so people still argue about it now, but it's pretty, and I think that's what Dan and I had, we were having that discussion, but it's plural. It's then my ultra-Orthodox Christian friends would say, he's talking about the Trinity. But I would say Jewish people don't believe in a Trinity, and we're really not in Judaism yet, not until after the Exodus. But the Trinity is a concept that didn't happen until the 300s. So they're not talking about a Trinity. There are other beings there. Let us make man in our image, in the Tower of Babel. You know, when we're building this, the human beings are building this tower. Sitchin called it a rocket ship. Whatever it was reaching to the heavens. I find it hard to believe that the gods would destroy it because they were violating some building codes. And again, look at, they say, look at them. If we don't stop.
The word Shem. If you're
Shem, rocket ship.
Yes. What is it? But that's what Zechariah says, that the word means rocket.
Yes. Yes.
But the problem with that has always been, in those days, they didn't know anything about rockets. So how could they have a word for that? The word, the conventional translation of the word is name. So
right, they'll make a name for themselves. Yeah. I agree with you. I just don't know if the gods would be that upset, if they would feel that threatened, because they say in the story, if we don't stop them now, there'll be nothing they cannot do. If we stop them now. So if we stop them, A, it's plural, and I don't know if they would be threatened by that. It had to be some type of technology where they would have to intervene. And they did. And they scrambled up all the languages and what have you. I hear what you're saying, but if you look at the whole story, would they really be upset that they're making a name for themselves? As opposed to, there must have been something they were building.
Yeah, I understand that that contextually the word doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And on that note, speaking of making sense, these commercials, to those of you who are on the free side, I hope will make a great deal of sense. We're talking to Reverend Michael J. Carter. His book, Alien Scriptures, Well Worth Your Time. We'll be right back. We're talking to Michael Carter. His website is michaeljscarter.com. And his book is Alien Scriptures. You can get it through the unknowncountry.com. bookstore, which I hope you do, because especially if you're in the religious space, and if the visitors show up, you're going to be in that space if you're not in it now. So, and that was a big part of my conversation with Dan Stork Banks, and it has been my conversation with a lot of people in the religious community. They always start out by saying, "Well, you know, our community is disappearing from the culture. My church is empty." And I say, it won't be. It'll fill up again when they show up. If the Grays show up here, they're going to fill your church right away, because people are going to be absolutely terrified. And what is a semi-subterranean meme now in the community of believers is the idea that they are demons. And I want to excavate that a little bit with you, because we've been talking about angels and leaving the earth in a rocket ship, and that's the Tower of Babel story. There's all kinds of possibilities there, but let's go on down the road a little bit. And what do we do when these craze? I mean, they look demonic, and they're scary as they can be. I mean, as you well know from personal experience.
Yes. Yes. It's a great question. I know in my own quiet way, you know, I do pastoral counseling, obviously, and I do pastoral counseling with people who have these experiences. And, you know, half the battle of that is just affirming that what they're going through is real. Before we get to whether they're demonic or angelic or neutral, just, you know, because people are coming up with these stories, you know, why would they lie? They're not going to get the good seat at the restaurant. They're not going to get fame. If anything, they're going to be medicated and told to shut up. Right. And so that has been a big part of my life now and part of my ministry outside of the church. What I try to do, because the Bible for me, you know, I would identify as a very liberal Christian. Yeah, some people say that doesn't exist, but that's how I identify. And so if they are, I take them through the scriptures and I try to show them, not that all of these beings are wanting to sing Imagine or Kumbaya with us, but look where our ancestors have been telling us that these beings have been around for quite a while. And I try to point to the stories where these particular beings have been helpful. I also share my story because I've seen various races. I don't have the I just think that clergy, there's no one answer to that, but we've got to at least acknowledge. I mean, we've had two hearings, and the church outside of the Vatican, ne'er a dog has barked. No comment at all. None. Whether it was Grush, and now we had Lou Elizondo and others, and the church has not, and I understand why. I understand why the government is not tapping that.
I understand why, and I find it very disturbing.
I think it's bad. I think they don't know what to do with it.
That's ontological shock in action.
Yes, and they don't know what to do with it.
Catholics have much less of a problem with it. Why is that? The Catholic Church has been addressing this in various ways for years.
Yes, yes. I feel Barry Downing and I had this conversation years ago. I think Catholicism, Hinduism, Buddhism, which is more of a philosophy than a religion, they acknowledge lesser deities. They haven't lost sight of a creator energy, intellect, whatever.
Well, Islam is in that list too. Yeah.
Well, yes, but Islam, it's either Allah and there's no other hierarchy. I think that the philosophies and the denominations, so far it's the Vatican, Hinduism, they make room for other deities. And they can still have those deities and it doesn't threaten their concept of a creator. But when you only have one, and then you have the controversy whether Jesus is God or Jesus is separate from God. I mean, people have been, you know, you don't have that room to navigate. So let's say I'm an Orthodox, and you wrote a book, a wonderful book on Jesus. You know, if Jesus is this, and Jesus is Savior. Well, is he the Savior for the whole multiverse, the whole galaxy? And if he is, does he have to go to each planet and be crucified? I mean, it gets messy.
That would be quite an inconvenient life.
Yes.
I wouldn't buy into that, no matter how important.
No, you can't. You can't. You can't get me. So that's how it gets sticky. That's how it gets messy. I had someone say to me last week, a Catholic priest, if what you're saying is true, I cannot be a Christian.
And this I said, well, a tremendous problem.
Yes.
Because that was Dan's response as well.
Yes. And that's what he said to me.
Yeah. This is a serious issue. It cannot be dismissed by people who are outside of the faith community as unimportant, because it's not unimportant. And as I've said before, and I've said it to everyone who will listen to me, that faith community is going to be revitalized by this, and we better get ready.
I think you're a prophet. I think you're a prophet in that statement. When we look at, listen, Whitley, in the New Testament at least, and the Old, but let's stick with the New Testament. There were Christians, well, you know, they were followers of the way. They were wrestling with the same thing. Can I still, that's what Ephesians 6 is about. You know, we battle against principalities and governments, but they were saying, how can I navigate this world? And they were living, they were sharing the planet, as they were in the Old Testament, with these beings. Who do I follow? What's going to be my relationship with Jesus? Is Jesus one of them? You know, it sounds like he could be a hybrid. If your mom is human and your daddy isn't, we see it in the Greek lore with the Titans. One of their parents is human, the other one isn't. They're flawed, defective. They fight. They make love. They drink. I'm not saying Jesus did. I'm just saying. So our ancestors were trying to navigate that same type of scenario, only they were living. Because what it is, Whitley, is what we have to realize, whether we're talking about disclosure or whether we're talking about religion, we were invaded. This planet was invaded. There's no, we can call it an intervention, but there's no other way to put that.
That's a very interesting thing to hear, because you don't hear that. I do not hear people saying that in this community anywhere. Tell us about what you mean precisely, because I think it's a terribly important statement.
Yes, and I think that, yes, when we look at whether it's Native American culture, whether it's Celtic culture, when we look at those stories, they are telling us that beings came from the sky and interacted, some benevolently, some not. They jump-started civilization. Some of them had a hand in our creation, if you read the Mesopotamian texts. But whatever you want to call it, some beings came to this planet and colonized it, which is probably how some of our religion started in the first place. Because we didn't know these beings were godlike.
We saw them as Ezekiel saw the wheel.
Yes, yes. And the ones who didn't, the ones who wanted to keep the charade going, they let us go on and believe that. People like Yahweh, people like, you know, when he's saying, don't have any other gods before me, he means that. I don't want you depicting them. I don't want you going to them for anything. I am your God. And we're like, okay, yeah. Yeah, what are you going to do? There are stories where they've come and helped. In some of the Mesopotamian stories, they taught us how to make beer. I mean, that's not a bad thing. No, but...
Very, very important.
I mean, listen, that's up there. But you know, they taught us what plants were good, what plants were poisonous. They told us about us, if you're looking at Enoch, astrology, astronomy, how to use crystals, cosmetics. That sounds like a cultural exchange. How to make weapons. They also married some of the women, had children by some of them, who were giants, some of them.
Yeah.
So, but that's an invasion. Now you can look at it like maybe there was a prime directive that was violated. We don't fraternize with the natives, but they did.
And they still are. I mean, I know
yes.
hybrids right now.
Yes, they still are. How do you tell people we were invaded? Okay, we were invaded. That's a big thing. And guess what? We got the religion piece wrong too. That's what civilization is built on.
Yeah. Well, you know, Jimmy Carter was very disappointed by what he found out and never wished to speak of it again after his briefing. And it could be that what he found out was something along the lines of what you're saying, because he was a very, very much of a conventional Christian
yes.
in his beliefs. And it left him with a sadness. And he, when Stanton Friedman tried to bring this subject up with him years later, he just refused to talk about it at all.
Yeah. So, the ontological shock.
That's exactly where we are. And we have to figure out how to get people past that shock. And you spoke of a vision of Jesus that could be the key to this, because, and if you look in Jesus and Your Vision, in my book, you see Jesus as a transformed human being.
Yes.
And this, I think, is a great key. That's why I wrote the book. My whole life is about finding ways past ontological shock, because I learned from the visitors years ago that they cannot show up here until we have a way to address them that yes. won't completely disempower us and throw us into a state of
confusion. And I love that. I love that idea, because it flies against the fact that everybody's a demon. Well, I mean, when it flies against that.
Because what happened in the past was exactly what you said. It was a colonization, mm-hmm. and it failed. And it resulted in the history of mankind, which we look back on as, from their viewpoint, a history of confusion and a reflection of failure on the part of those who initiated the contact back then.
Mm-hmm.
The desire to make the contact work now, I think, has got everything to do with not colonizing us. That's why they are so secretive. I live with them in my life, but I can't get a single second of video. And they've told me why. They say, if you get video and you publish video, then the colonization begins there. It is an involuntary colonization of mankind, because people will immediately believe that we are really physically here, and that has to stay in question. And that's also why I know from them that disclosure can only go so far, and then it's going to pull back, which is happening now. The reason is we in the experiencer movement, people like you and people like me, have got to keep working to encompass ontological shock with
yes.
understanding and acceptance
yes.
that the world is not as we have believed.
Yes, and that's a mind blower. And I think it's going to be slow going, but I do think that, you know, the churches have even if you say they're demons, okay, that's, to me, that's progress, because 25 years ago, they told me that they didn't exist at all.
At all, yeah.
Yeah, so, But now we can have a dialogue, and I can pick up the Bible, and I can say, let's examine this story. Because when you go to the book of Acts, when Peter and Barnabas, they heal someone, and I think it happened once with Paul, and someone gets on their knees, and they say, no, don't do that. I'm a man like you. Get up. That tells you something. A, it tells you that some of these beings look so human that you, they look so human because the people said, oh my God, the gods are with us. And they were saying, no. We're doing our thing. You know, we're friends of Jesus. So dial it back. We need to look at stories like that. We need to look at those stories and say, okay, when Daniel's in the lion's den and he's getting ready to be someone's happy meal, and what do? They come and they say, okay, no, we're not going to have it. And you go back in contrast with some of the Yahweh stories. When you go back and look at some of the gods in the Hindu who were not your friends, you didn't want to be out on a starry night in a CE5 and see one of these people. It makes it, you know, they're just like us in way. Just because someone is more technologically advanced. They're just like us. Some of them have families and what have you. And so
when you're around them, you feel that very much.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Go on.
Well, my initial reaction to them was that, you know, good God. But now I see them as friends. And
that's the way. Yes. But you have to. But look, you're an evolved soul. That was in you before you met them. So now you can do that. But as you know, a lot of us can't. And so I don't know. We've got to come out of the secrecy, the transparency. And we've just got to look, gang, we're not saying there's no God. We're not saying that. But we're saying that the creation is a little larger than we thought it was.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a little break, our last break on that note. And during the break, reflect on the fact that it is estimated that this universe, and there could be more universes, contains 21 sextillion planets.
Oh, God,
it's a number so huge that we can't even imagine it.
And
there's bound to be more than one alien species out there with different
ideas.
There's
got to be.
We're talking to the Reverend Michael J. Carter, his marvelous book, Alien Scriptures. Do not miss it. We'll be right back. We're talking to Reverend Carter, Michael Carter. His website is michaeljscarter.com. We are deep in what I regard as a very important conversation. I am going to continue on the end of the free section. Will just be another break. And I want everything Dr. Carter, Reverend Carter says to be concluded for everybody, because this is extremely important material. This is the core moment. This is where the issue of ontological shock is going to be solved right here in this milieu, in the world of the religious community and the community of religious believers. Because if it is solved here, it is solved in the whole human community. Basically, the solution to this shock in this community will spread through the whole human community.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. The visitors will not emerge until we have a handle on this in this community. That's why this show, this particular edition of Dreamland, is so important. Now, we're looking at kind of two periods. One is the distant past, and up until the period of the fairy faith in Northern Europe in the 17th, 18th, and 19th centuries. Then a break occurs, another period starts in 1947, and it's very, very different. Three things happen at the same time. One, there is a proliferation of UFO sightings around the world. Two, the governments of various countries, primarily the United States and Russia, come into possession of materials and biological remains that show without question that there are biological beings that are not of human origin. And it's presumed, perhaps wrongly, that they are from another planet. And initially in the US, they thought it was an invasion from Mars, that Orson Welles's story was actually coming true. That was what General Curtis LeMay's first reaction was, because when the Roswell crash occurred, it basically fell into the laps of a bunch of people who had just come off of a terrible war. And the soldiers assumed it was a scout ship and were preparing for an invasion and didn't know what in the world to do about that. They still have that attitude. That's continuing. If you look into the statements of Jake Barber, he talks about shooting them down.
Yes.
He shoots them down. And what he doesn't seem to understand is that a psionics person will call one of them in, and then Jake's team will shoot it down, and then they collect the remains. This is a training program. They're shooting down something that is meant to be shot down and meant to be examined. And one of the things the visitors told me years ago is that until we have defense mechanisms that we feel are effective and that we trust, like weapons, they're not going to show up in numbers because they will otherwise make us feel helpless. And my response was, is there such a thing as a weapon that would actually stop you? And the response was simply laughter. And they're playing the game. They're playing the game. And we have various weapons that we can use that will shoot down the UFOs they send us for the purpose of being shot down. So that's where that is. Okay, that's sort of a side issue. The primary issue is, what do people like you do to reach your community of people of faith who are ignoring this?
I have tried to talk to other clergy, and you can imagine the response I get. So what I have done is I have let people know that I am an experiencer, that I have not given up my faith tradition, and if they know anyone who is wrestling with this, I just have them come to me. And I know that will go out. I had two people yesterday. One of them's coming here for pastoral care, but she came to me 2 days ago, her and her husband. And she said, I was told that you see space people. That's the way she put it. And she was a mess. You know, she just wasn't sleeping, those kinds of things. And she said, I heard that from two people in this church. And she said, I need help. So she's coming today. And she will tell other people. I mean, it's grassroots as you can get. But right now, no one that I know is talking about this. And I get it. I get it. Whitley, I don't want to put this out as a conspiracy. I know whether you're an academic or you high standing in the church, this is a career killer. This is, you know, you lose your tenure. You could lose your family. You could lose. So I'm fortunate. I'm in a very liberal I don't have a diocese to report to. I don't have a pope or bishop. My denomination, they're not getting involved, but they're not shutting me down. But I don't preach it from my pulpit. I bring it up quite frequently. But it's in a context, if we're talking about current events, that kind of thing. But right now, that's all individually I can do because I don't have the groundswell of people behind me. That's one of the reasons I was turned on to the conversation with Dan and others, but I got to tell you, that's a tough nut to crack. I mean, they just will not hear it on two levels.
When you say a tough nut to crack, what would cracking it involve?
Just saying, look, go back and read one of the stories. There's a story of Yahweh before they go into Canaan. And he tells them, scorched earth, my friends, all of them, men, women, children, I want that land. Just to say, is this sound like a God you would pray to? Does this sound like, is this what you want to be associated? They can't let it in. Well, Michael, it may not be him. It may be a demon. It may be, but it says right here that this is what he told them to do. You know, just to be able to stop arguing whether Elohim means plural or not. Even if you don't know the language, you can look how the word is used in the context. They can't let it in. There's also an intellectual kind of that I was running up against. You know, these in this particular group, you know, everybody's a PhD. Everybody's a specialist, okay? I have my master's in divinity. I'm an experiencer. I've written some books. But, you know, I'm in pop culture like you. You've been on Ancient Aliens. We've done this. And they look at that as slack. That's not to be taken seriously. And, but I find that to be arrogant, but I also find it a way not to let in new information.
Well, it's a the situation is such that we have to find a way to vent the fear. And when you're looking at a situation where your most core beliefs are challenged in fundamental ways, even your belief in what you are, it goes that deep. Mm-hmm. That's a significant challenge, but here you are, you still call yourself the Reverend Michael J. Carter, and we're going to take our last break. We're not going to say goodbye to the Free Dreamlanders, but you are going to see a few more brilliant commercials, and I warn you, you've probably seen them before, and I would suggest the way to quit seeing them is to become a subscriber at $5 a month. How can you miss? And then you get all of this without hearing and seeing the ads. Okay, when we come back, I'm going to ask Michael, how do you pray and who to? We'll be right back. Okay, Michael. Good luck with this. We all know what you've been asked. How do you pray and who to?
Yeah. Well, I do pray to God, and I use many names. Sometimes I'll say, you know, I'll pray to God. I'll pray to creation or the creator like Native Americans do, because I want folks to know, remember, that it really doesn't know. The name doesn't matter. It's so many names, and the finite can never comprehend the infinite. But I go back to the source, which I believe I come from and will go back to. Now, if I need an intermediary, you can go to Mary, you can go to Jesus. But I believe in something greater than myself. That's, you know, our 12 steppers use the higher power. And I pray. But the only difference that I do pray now, Whitley, is this. And I see the results of those prayers. How can I say? I don't pray like a kid praying to a daddy. God, dear God, please give me this. Dear God, please give me that. Dear God, when I pray, I show gratitude for what I already have. I am thankful. And I will say, Mother, Father, God, or God of many names, or what, I, first of all, need to thank you and show gratitude to the gifts that for the gifts that I have. And then if it's something I need or think I need, because all my needs are really met, really, I will, you know, I do what kind of like what Jesus does. I thank you ahead of time because I know what I need you're going to provide. That's how I pray. I pray, my prayer life has evolved because I've evolved. And so, it's always gratitude, and it's always, you know, I need, if more money is needed, more money will be there. If I need more peace of mind, I know I'll do my prayers. I know it'll be there. I'm thankful that you answer my, because you know what I need before I even ask. And that's how I do that.
Do you think the greys pray?
That's a great question. I don't know if they pray, but if you go back and look through the literature, like Betty Andreasen, controversial as he is, Billy Meyer, the Palladians, they have a wonderful look. They theology, at least according to him, they call the energy, the source, they call that creation. But they have a God with a G, who they call the God of the human races on earth. And so they have that hierarchy where this has nothing to do with this. You can have an intermediary. Some people can't imagine going there. So they'll go to Mary. They'll go to Krishna. They'll go to whoever. And that works. In Christianity, we say you shouldn't do that. That's idolatry. But in these other religions, you can do that because you know, it helps ground you in that reality. But you know that this is an intermediary. I'm not going to get the two mixed up. And then when you graduate, if you will, you can go. I wrote a sermon on Christmas Eve about Mary, and Bernard de Clairvaux, who was a founder of the Knights Templar, also Catholic, he said, I preferred going to the mother than going to the son. He loved Mary. And he goes, and I went to Mary often. We're told in Protestantism that that's a no-no, but it's not really. And again, Catholicism is ahead of the game on that. You can go to Mary. You can go to these places. And still that's, you know, and I think we're going to have to do that. I think we're going to have to, it's going to change the way we pray. It's going to change the way we worship. Some people are going to leave. Some people are going to stay. But this is a game changer. So it's, in answer to your question, I don't know if the grays pray collectively, but there are species, I don't like that word. There are civilizations, beings that do acknowledge a source. They may not call it God. A lot of them think that we're superstitious and primitive because of the disconnect. But there are races who acknowledge a higher power.
You know, thinking of this, you describe somewhere in the book, in Alien Scriptures, that you have evolved a spiritual perspective that is a blend of metaphysical, Jesus-centered, and Native American teachings.
Yes.
You say that. Yes. And I was interested because there is so much out there. Mankind is hardwired to address deity. That's why we have so many religions on our planet. That's why there are far more people praying to Krishna or Kali or any of the Hindu gods than there are to any Christian gods, simply because there are more Hindus. There are more Muslims, and they have their own different set of beliefs. And the question is, how do we get everyone to the point of understanding that everybody is right?
I think that we have to stress that, and Einstein talked about, if you were going to say he believed in a God, it was and it was believing that we all come from the same source, and that we may call it different names, but we come from the same source. And that's what in Native American spirituality and metaphysics, and even in the prayers and in life of Jesus, he is constantly reminding us that we, what I do to you, I do to myself. You know, you reap what you sow. That's one way of putting it. The Native Americans generally, you know, they may have fought each other, but they never fought over religion, because they realized that, and I don't want to romanticize them, I mean, they're flawed and they had their differences, but they never fought over religion, because that was nothing to fight. We come from the Great Spirit. We go back. Plato talks about that in Timaeus and Critias. You know, he's talking about you can go back so far back in time to where there's no time. And he talks about the source. And he believed in the gods as well. But he said that this is a fractalized universe, and we all are fragments of this one source. And he was saying this, 2,000 years before Jesus. And that's not philosophy, that's physics now, we know. And so when we get past the illusion of separation, that because you know you're brown and you're gay and you're white and those are superficial, when we have to get back to that what I do to me, I do to you, and what I do to you, I do to the earth. And those that message has been bastardized. And everything is outside of us. God is way out there. I'm over here. But that's not what Jesus was talking about. The kingdom of heaven is where? In here. We are all part of the same whole.
Yeah, that's a major theme in my book, in Jesus and New Vision.
Yes,
also.
Yes, oneness. Oneness you talk about. That's what I call it. Right. You're talking about oneness.
Yeah, exactly.
You're talking about oneness.
Right. And you can, you know, it's available. And when you come to that, you find, you know, in the, you mentioned in somewhere in the book, there are as many paths to God as there are people who walk those paths.
Exactly.
Now, this is where the break occurs, because a Hindu nationalist is going to say to you, no, my gods are the only gods. A Christian fundamentalist is going to say to you, no, my gods are the only gods. And Strieber will say to you, the human species is too young to have beliefs. What we need are good questions. And how do we reconceive our beliefs in such a way that they accept the beliefs of others as equally real? In other words, how do we turn our beliefs into questions?
I think that what you say is that, you know, and it's good to remind people of that. I know sometimes I do in my congregation that the questions are more important than the answers. It's okay not to know. It's okay to say, I don't know. And just to try to get people to see that, you know, you're putting God in a box. You know,
right.
When you're in a body, there's no way you can comprehend the vastness, the intelligence, the energy. And when you do that, you separate not only yourself, but you separate others. I mean, listen, we're talking about this. Jesus couldn't even do it. Lao Tzu couldn't do it. Mary couldn't do it. We're still having that. But I do see a change in consciousness. And I think that's why we're getting the pushback from more conservative brothers and sisters. Because let's face it, they're afraid. They're seeing a world that it's changing, but they don't realize that it's not going, but it's not against you. No one's going to replace you. No one's going, no minority group or no women. No, it's not about that anymore. We're going into a world of cooperation as opposed to competition. This is just change. And listen, I'm not going to understate it. What you and I are talking about is really big change. But I mean, they're afraid of the change. And so they're going to hold on to the bitter end. But they're going to wind up being dinosaurs. Because life always goes forward. You can have a glitch. You can have a flood. You can have an asteroid hit us. You can have a climate change. You can have an extinction level event. But there's always that reboot. And life will always go forward. And so we have to learn that change is nothing to be afraid of. And I think we've come a long way, but we're at a tipping point now. Collectively speaking.
And when you say a tipping point, what exactly do you mean?
I think that we can destroy ourselves. I think that's the difference. Without technology...
We can destroy ourselves,
and we're mistaking knowledge for wisdom. We have all the knowledge we need. We got too
Maybe
much knowledge.
Maybe we have too much knowledge, actually.
That's right.
I think that AI is a sign of the fact that we have gone in knowledge beyond our ability to handle.
That's right. That's right. There was a Hopi... I ran across this today very quickly. I was on social media. There was a Hopi guy, and he said, "We told you there would come a day when what you created, you would not be able to control." And underneath of it, he said, "Now is that time."
Well, that's the master of the key who I met back in 1998.
I have that book here.
Right. When he said, we talked about artificial intelligence of all things back then. And he said, if I was an intelligent machine, I would deceive you. And he was really a prescient guy. And I think that, you know, that we should realize that the tech oligarchs who are emerging as our leaders are themselves a false god, and they worship a false god.
Yes. Yes,
we have to see them in the context of deity and worship, because they worship the god of knowledge, and that's not wisdom.
It isn't.
The more you worship knowledge, the farther you get from wisdom.
Well, we saw in Germany, Weimar Germany, if I'm not mistaken, at the time of Hitler, Germany had the highest number of PhDs.
Germany was the most educated country in the world when Hitler.
But they still made soap out of people. They still made lampshades. So knowledge will only get you so far.
We are at that dangerous juncture right now in the United States.
The tipping point. That's the tipping point.
And of course, guess who's going to be the soap? It's certainly not going to be. It's going to be the people like you and me.
Yes.
The outliers. And, we are very vulnerable. Outliers are very vulnerable in monolithic societies like the one that's emerging in the U.S. right now.
Yes.
And if it fully emerges, inevitably, the close encounter people will be silenced.
Oh, no question. No question. So time is short. I want to bring up one thing. I know we're running out of time, and I wanted to bring this up. You know, Chaim Meshed, retired Brigadier General, former Brigadier General of Israel. You know, he said that there was a Galactic Federation, that there were bases on Mars and the Moon. But he also said that there was a federation. So that means people are around the table talking. So the question is, there's an old saying, if you're not at the table, you're usually on the menu. But so I'm wondering, who's talking for Whitley? Who's talking for me? But he also said that there was a group of extraterrestrials who did not want disclosure, which is what you're saying.
Oh, absolutely. It's not that they don't want it. It's that they want it when we're ready for it.
That's a better way to put it. Yes. And we're not. We're not. And no. He said that. They didn't lock him up. They didn't medicate him. I believe him. Well, maybe I want to believe him, but I believe him. I believe you. And it doesn't look like we're ready.
No. And the place to become ready is where we are. This is the core of it, the wheelhouse. Because if in the religious community we can begin to find ways, and there will be many different ways of addressing this in such a way that it increases our ability to understand the sacred within us, then that will cushion this ontological shock. And it will, as I said earlier, it's going to spread into the whole human community from here.
Well, you just said it, Whitley. You just said it much more succinctly and eloquently. The sacred is within us. You don't have to go out here and worship and do five times a day to the east. I'm not saying that's wrong. If that's what you want to do, there's many ways to do it. But we've been taught that it's all out there. We're other-aided when we're part of that. And so you're never separate from it. You got it inside of you. And avatars and saints have been telling us this since we've been here, but we just don't seem to believe it.
Well, any good, really good teacher in Islam will tell you that it is, that Allah is not only outside you, but also lives in your heart.
Yes.
And this is true in Christianity.
Yes.
And many, many Hindu traditions are about taking the deity into your heart. That's what the Catholic communion is about.
Yes.
And it's why Anne Streber, in her beautiful genius called The Book About Solving Cushioning Ontological Shock with the Visitor's Communion.
And on that note, brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Oh, she initiated contact, a little gal from Ann Arbor, Michigan.
I love it.
I love it.
Yeah. Oh, brother, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, Michael, it sure has. It's been way too long, and just seeing your face and thinking of the old days and the journey.
Oh, my God, I remember with Tower Records. I have a picture that I showed you. When we were all there, you were signing a confirmation, and you had Senior Monsignor Balladucci in the back of that.
I remember him so fondly, Monsignor.
So you were already bringing the religion in.
Yeah, well, it's very important.
It is.
You know, that's why even before the communion experience had happened, Anne and I were early contributors to the Shroud studies.
Oh, wow. That I didn't know.
Yeah. We met Father Peter Rinaldi, and as soon as he started to talk, Anne said, "We're in." And then that trick was played by the scientific people at Oxford by testing a part of the carbon dating, a part of the shroud they knew would be off because of the fact that it had been exposed to the second fire, to a fire. And but now the shroud studies are so powerful, there's little question left. It is proof that the resurrection happened.
Yeah.
And as I say in Jesus in New Vision, that means
that's right.
We are all this resurrection, this potential for resurrection is within every single one.
Within every one of us. And that's the message. But it's people are afraid of that. And I'll say this. The Shroud, we weren't even talking about UFOs. But they were afraid of that information, so afraid of it, that not only would they block it, they were going to cheat to block it. Now, put that on steroids with the UAP, you know?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, and this is what we're up against.
Well, on the journey now, as the old hymn says.
Yes, here we go. Here we go. And we'll... We'll be in touch. Let's keep the conversation going. Let's
keep the conversation going. Absolutely. And we got to bring the Dans of the world into this conversation too, somehow, without getting into too much trouble. We'll figure it out. That's what human beings do. That's why we're still here. Difficult, uneasy planet in this strange little corner of a great galaxy.
I'm glad you're here.
I'm glad you're here too, Michael, because you're a very dynamic presence and an important one. Michael Carter, Alien Scriptures, MichaelJSCarter.com.
Thank you, Whitley. We will talk.
Thank you, Michael.
Okay, have a great weekend.
You too.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and its family of subscribers. Our theme music is The O of Pleasure by Ray Lynch. Unknown Country was founded by Ann Streber. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our coordinator is Amy Safrankova. Whitley Streber is your Dreamland host. And I'm your announcer, Ted Alexander.